Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
What's going on? Welcome to Full Blast Podcast. I'm Jeff Fader. Before we get into it with me, by myself, on Valentine's Day, fine, let's talk about a little bit of business. What do you say? First things first. Broadbeck Ironworks, makers of the 2x72 grinder, among other things. They make grinders, grinder attachments, and all sorts of awesome parts for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers. If you are a sculptor, if you're a woodworker, you're removing material, you want to get yourself involved with Broadbeck Ironworks. And if you go to broadbeckironworks.com, put in the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off of their grinders, their attachments, their parts, and even all their specials. And if you have a grinder, but you're just like, I don't need a grinder, but I could use some of their parts, the attachments are retrofittable. You're a clever person. You can figure it out. So definitely check out what's going on with them. Great American company, great customer service, Broadbeck Ironworks. Next are my friends at Even Heat, manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com. Check out all their different types of ovens, their kilns, for heat-treating knives, stainless, Damascus, for Damasteel, anything you need heat-treated, this is the one for you because it gets you right where you need to be. Go get yourself, here's a free tip. Go get yourself, they're all free. You're not paying. Just relax. Go get yourself Dr. Laren Thomas's must-have book, Knife Engineering, and you can get that at maritimeknifesupply.com, by the way. And he will have all the ranges of where you need to be heat treating your stuff. And depending on the hardness you want, depending on the steel you're using, you want to get in a very specific range. And the best way to do it is with an Even Heat. It ain't no nothing better. If you're getting something hard on Valentine's Day, use an Even Heat. Or any day. You don't even have to be Valentine's Day to get something hard. You know what I'm saying? Get yourself one of the best in the best. evenheat-kiln.com. Check it out. Next are my friends. Speaking of Dr. Laren Thomas, if you want to get Dr. Laren Thomas' must-have book, Knife Engineering, among other things, go to maritimeknifesupply.com, maritimeknifesupply.ca for all your knife-making needs, belts, abrasives, steels, kilns, forges, presses, heat-treating ovens, and many, many more things. He's a knife maker. Lawrence is a knife maker, and he understands what you need because he needs the same stuff. So if he knows that you need it and he needs it, he's going to get it. Every time I talk about a product or something like that, he'll shoot me a message while he's listening to Knife Talk or this, and he'll send me saying, I got that. Every time. I mean, it's like with clockwork. He's on it because he cares about the knife-making business. He cares about the community. He's also very involved in the New England School of Metalwork. He does scholarships to the New England School of Metalwork. He's very involved. And you want to talk about a guy who's very involved in the company, an organization, or you want to talk, not either one of those, but if you want to talk about a guy who is enveloped in the knife-making community, enveloped, ladies and gentlemen, he's enveloped. Go talk to Lawrence Lake over at Maritime Knife Supply. if you want to support someone who supports you, this is the guy to support. I got by my belts from him. He just sent me a nice package of belts. They're awesome. Threw some mints in there, a couple stickers. Well, he's my guy. So go to maritimeknifesupply.com. And you're saying, Jeff, but you're in New York and he's in Canada. It came just as fast and it's just as good. And it's just the same. I mean, he can do it. And if you're in Canada and you're not using Maritime Knife Supply and you're a knife maker, You're dumb. I mean, that's it. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's making it happen for people in Canada and the United States. MaritimeKnifeSupply.com, all right? Next are my friends at Trojan Horse Forge. I owe Sam Evans a phone call. Sam, if you're listening, I owe you a phone call. If I don't give you a phone call, if you hear this and I haven't given you a phone call, I am human garbage. That's where that's to be. So it's on me now. Really, Sam, I owe you a phone call, and it's Valentine's Day, and if I haven't given you a phone call before you hear this, I am human garbage. But you are not human garbage, nor is Jeff. You guys are the makers of the Stable Rail Knife Finishing Vise over at Trojan Horse Forge. Vises built in the heart of Texas. These guys make vises that will make your life easier when it comes to finishing your knives. And I'm going to talk about finishing your knives. I'm talking about your hand sanding. It has a deck that bolts on. It's got rubber pads. It's great. It holds your knife perfectly. If you have an integral bolster, don't worry about that. If it's a curved blade, don't worry about that. If it's got a distal taper, don't worry about that. All you guys, you say to these questions to me, say, well, what about? Don't worry about that. Listen, go get yourself one of them Stable Rail knife finishing vices. And it's not like they're easy to get a hold of either. When they make them, they make them. And when they're gone, they're gone. And then they make another batch. It's a hot ticket item. Not to mention they're making stuff for the knife finishing vise. And I even forgot to tell you, you finish hand sanding your blade and you put your handle on, you finish grinding it up and you got to finish it. Hold it in the Stable Rail knife finishing vise and be in comfort. Don't fuck around with 2x4s. Are you nuts? 2x4s are not for you anymore. You got the Stable Rail knife finishing vise. Are you out of your mind? Have you lost your mind? What are you doing? Are you serious? Sorry, my bad. This is Valentine's Day. I don't know what the hell's going on with me. But go get yourself one of them Stable Rail knife finishing vises at TrojanHorseForge.com. And if you put in the promo code FULLBLAST10, you're going to get 10% off all that, all the T4 Sentinel oil, the handle press attachment, which fits onto your Stable Rail knife finishing vises and allow you to get yourself squared away, get your handle put up on that tang. You know what I'm saying? So definitely go check out your Trojan Horse Forge, TrojanHorseForge.com. Thank you once again. And Sam, I told you, if you haven't gotten a phone call from me before you've heard this, I am human garbage. Okay, just letting you know, I'm putting it out there. It's on me now. Next are my friends at BakerForge.com. That's Baker Forge and Tool on Instagram. I've gotten more messages about the episode I had with Coy Baker. Well, a ton of them. Coy is the man, and the steel that he makes is amazing. And I'm amazed. I'm amazed that I was really cool hearing how they do it. It was cool how they built this great American. I mean, they're doing I don't know if it's micro anymore. I was going to say micro manufacturing, but he's manufacturing. He's got dudes. They're like, you're talking about a company that's doing old school work, old school, you know, grinders and power hammers and presses and rolling mills, and they're making products for the marketplace. And if you go to, and what kind of products you ask? Copper masks, coppice, copper mye, bronze mye, tiger mye, all this stuff that's really amazing with pattern welded steel or Damascus, if you, whatever you want to call it. You got a core and then you have cladding and then you have a copper shim. And he told me on this podcast, they're going to start doing some new stuff. You got to listen to that episode. He dropped a bomb. Not on the other flea bag podcast that he may or may not go on. Not all the other dorks that he hangs out with on different podcasts. He said it right here. He dropped a bomb. So go check out what's going on over at Baker Forge and Tool. Get yourself some of that ripple. The Tiger Mye, get yourself some of that Bronze Mye, get yourself some of that Riptide. I just use some of that Riptide as dynamite stuff. Easy to work with, annealed, easy to cut on your shitty bandsaw. Get yourself squared away, get a little razzle dazzle in your life. If you're a stock removal guy, this is the stuff for you, for sure, 100%. I'm with you. Get yourself some of that Baker Forge. Go to BakerForge.com, put in the promo code FULLBLAST, get your 10% off. And did I tell you what you should be etching it in? Did I? Have I mentioned the product that you should be etching all your steel in? You should be going gator piss. gator piss, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm telling you, I'm getting messages from people saying that their kids are starting talking about gator piss. They're asking what the hell's gator piss, and they're actually getting the urine out of alligators to get this. It's amazing etching, and this stuff is awesome. And look, the name is the name. Heathawk talks about the name on the product. You don't like the name? Don't worry about it. What are you going to do? Stuff is all. See, if the stuff sucked, if gator piss sucked, then you can say, gator piss is a bullshit. It's really good. It's really good. I don't buy ferric anymore. I only get gator piss, and it really works well on etching everything. I use it to etch stainless. When I'm doing stonewash finish, I'm using gator piss vinegar. Don't ask me. Talk to him. Get yourself some of that gator piss at bakerforge.com, or if you're in the EU, go to diyeurope.eu. You got all that gator piss, and as I said, gator short for alligator, piss is short for urine. And apparently I said for a long time that they don't know what an alligator is in Europe. And Steve House, last week's guest, told me, well, we are educated, Jeff. We do have education. So sorry. I just assume if you don't see it, you don't know what it is. I don't know. There are no alligators in Europe. How the fuck do I know? I don't know. I don't know if you use the nickname of alligator and call it a gator. I don't know. I don't know what you do, Steve. Give me a break. Get yourself some of that gator piss at bakerforge.com. Put in the promo code FULLBLAST and get yourself that 10% off. Next are my friends at Total Boat. That's totalboat.com/FULLBLAST and get yourself some of that special. Get that two-part epoxy. Get that UV Cure Clear Resin. Stick something in that. Why don't you just get a bucket, make some of that two-part epoxy, or get some of that thick-set casting epoxy and stick something in it. I don't know what else to tell you. What do I use it for, Jeff? I don't know. What do you do? What do you do for work? What do you do for a living? What do you do for fun? You mix up some of this thick casting stuff, you pour it in a thing, and you shove something in it. And then you let it harden, and then you do something with it. Well, I got to hold your hand for everything? I'll tell you what I use to do. I can't tell you what to do with it. I'll tell you what I do with it. I use a two-part epoxy for handle scales. I glue up my handle scales with a two-part epoxy from Total Boat, and I love it. So, I can't tell you what you should do. I'll tell you what you should do. And in this podcast, I'm going to tell you what to do. And what I'm going to tell you to do is go to totalboat.com/fullblast, get yourself some of that thick casting epoxy, and shove something in it. Jesus. There's an ad read for you, ladies and gentlemen. That's why. I'd say that's why they pay me the big bucks, but if you only knew the truth. Next are my friends at Giel Hansen & Sons, makers of G-Carta, which is a unique composite of natural fibers and fabrics mixed with epoxy under pressure. Stuff is tight. Tight. Looks like brain coral. Looks like crazy colors and crazy. He's got a good GL Hansen Sons. They have a good set of eyes on them because these things look great. Sometimes you get some micartas that are like two tone, and they look like, I'm sorry to sell you this, they look like shit. They're not great. And I'd say every time I see some of the stuff from GL Hansen Sons, I'm amazed how good they look. Get yourself some of that Bofa, Ripple Cut, Tuxini, Mahi Mahi, Radio Worm Giccarta. Get some of that Pheasant, Hoopla, Colorama. And you're saying to me, what are these words that you're saying? These are the names or some of these wild, wild things. And you go to g.l._Hansen & Sons on Instagram, and then you'll get to see it. And you know what you can do? You can get yourself some of that Electric Fuzz. That's the stuff I named. And basically what it is it's fabrics and under pressure and epoxy, and then they cut it on the bias, and then you end up with this wild, I hate to say like some salami, the salami of knife scales, but I mean, GL, kind of. I mean, that's your, hey, GL, if you're listening, my man, next one you got to name it the Golden Salami. I'm telling you, do one yellow. GL Hansen & Sons, listen to me right now. Get yourself some yellow, some white, some orange, some red, and throw it in a pattern. Yellow, orange, white, and red. And then maybe you throw like a blue stripe in there every so often. You call it the Golden Salami. God damn it. GL Hansen and Sons, I'm with you, man. I'm with you. I want to see, I'm looking forward to the golden salami. You will sell some slaps. Listen, GL, they're selling gator piss, and they're selling out the wazoo. Get yourself some of that golden salami. Or if you're listening to this and you're saying, hey, listen, I really want to see this golden salami made, go send a message to GL Hansen and Sons. Says, Fader says you should make the golden salami. I'm with you, 100%. GL Hansen and Sons, go get yourself some of that in the future. Get some of the golden salami. I mean, you can't make it up. How awesome would it be if you saw a handle, white stripe, you know how they do, white and yellow and make a ray, and you call it the golden salami. Jesus Christ, that's a good idea. GL Hansen and Sons, go to gcarta.bigcartel.com. Get yourself some of that in the future. I cannot wait till we start selling the golden salami, goddammit. This stuff is awesome. Get yourself that golden salami, all right, ladies and gentlemen. All right, guys, I lost my mind. Last but certainly not least, I want to thank my friends at Tormach, celebrating 50 years in business with the Black T8 sharpening system, this water-cooled sharpening system. I use it every day. I have three of them. I have three different grits, and it makes my life easier. I'm getting great edges, repeatable edges, and I'm efficient, and I'm not taking too much material off. I love these things, and if you go to Tormach.com, you check out what they're doing, and you go to @Tormach_sharpening on Instagram and see what the fuss is all about. 100% has changed the way I make knives. I've started to see how I can fix my geometry, and a lot of it has to do with trying to maximize the Tormach. So get yourself involved with that. And last but certainly not least, 15 minutes. Well, listen, what are you going to do? I want to tell you, I have Pat Quinn coming on in the next few weeks, and we are doing an all blacksmith questions answers show where Pat Quinn, who's been on before, I go down the Center for Metal Arts. He's the big guy. He's the coordinator. He runs Center for Metal Arts. He is easily one of the most important blacksmith per people in the United States in terms of forging education. He will be on here answering your questions. But if you don't send me your questions and cut it out with the bullshit, send me real questions. You know, sometimes you guys play too hard. And what I want to do is I want to take some of your questions and I want to read them and I want to make you feel bad about yourself. But at the same time, it's like, this is a serious operation. Send real good questions, basic, whatever. Just keep them coming in. You're doing fine. There's a couple of you who are a little bit, schmucky, but I understand. I'm schmucky too. Go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram and DM your questions into us. I want serious questions. Please. Pat Quinn's coming up, and I'm going to make sure we have lots of questions and answer your questions, and you're going to be able to hear real answers from a guy who is established and who knows what the fuck he's talking, what the heck he's talking, what he's talking about. You know what I'm saying? All right, guys, listen. Happy Valentine's Day. It's going to be 2 weeks late. I'm recording this on Valentine's Day, and I realized that, so yesterday, the day before Valentine's Day, we had a huge snowstorm, and I had to close the shop. We couldn't get up the hill. So we had to switch some time around, and I had to kind of change things up so we could make time up, and I decided, because usually I record on Mondays, I wanted to make sure I had enough time in the shop on Monday, so I've decided to just take a little time on Wednesday, on Valentine's Day, and give you a little bit of tough love. You know what I'm saying? I'm going to give you a little bit of tough love, and this has come out on one. I'm two Fridays away. I'm two Fridays away from you. Two Fridays behind. Fine. I'm not going to do any side talk. I'm not going to do any bullshit. I'm not going to give you a little, how's your week been? I'm going to talk to podcast. I'm going to direct some ire towards podcasters at the end, if I can remember. But I was listening to Howard Stern this morning, and he had Billy Joel on. Now, Howard Stern is a radio icon. As far as broadcasting goes, he is on the Mount Rushmore of broadcasting in the United States, as far as most people are concerned. Radio Hall of Fame. He doesn't even give a fuck. He's like far superior to any broadcaster who's ever been on. You could definitely, without question, put him on a high list in terms of people who have done it all, who have the longevity and the continued success throughout the longevity of his career. He has he's been a huge influence on my life. And part of that, it's interesting to see that we're going to talk about influence and inspiration. He influenced a lot of the decisions that I've made. Now, back in the day, I was home alone. I'm not going to bore you, but I was home alone because Matt Latchkey kid, parents are divorced. I was afraid at home, and I wanted the radio to be my companion. So I used to say that Howard Stern was more like my third parent or my fourth parent, but it was more along the lines of he was almost like my babysitter or friend because he kept me company. When I was really needed I needed a companionship. I was afraid and I was alone and I was young. So I've been, and it's been really, really cool. The first time I heard him was 1982, the first year he was in New York. When I was very young, it was crazy. I remember, I'll never forget, I was in the car with my dad. Dad was a big radio guy. He used to say, let's listen to this new guy, Howard Stern. First 5 seconds in, we're driving down Lexington Avenue. We're banking on 68th Street. We're banking a left on the 68th Street. 68th Street? Yeah, 68th Street, where Hunter College is. And he goes, all right, next person to tell me. I got Elvis Costello tickets. And the next person to tell me what Elvis has named his penis, Elvis Presley's named his penis, you're going to get 2 free tickets to Elvis Costello. And we're like, I cannot believe it. I've been listening to him for, I want to say, 45 years. 44 years I've been listening to Howard Stern. And it's been wild listening to him in terms of the transformation that he has had over, you know, growing older on the radio. And, you know, you obviously make changes in your life when you get on the older side. So now the way he interviews is different. Back in the day, the interview was just to be how, you know, he was, and he'll even admit that he used to be more, it was more about him. It was more about his own, you know, seeking approval and his own narcissism. And as he grew older, he started to realize that when he was interviewing people, it's far more interesting to kind of hear the things that people don't normally say. And you can tell that he creates now his interview style is a lot more long form, and he's very prepared. He understands where he wants to go. He doesn't have papers in front of him. You can tell that he's very engaged. He is very organized. He's very engaged. And then what he ends up doing is he asks questions that maybe haven't been asked before. And then he'll also not only ask questions that have been asked before, but he'll also be very attentive to the answers and then kind of climb onto the thing that his interviewee has said. So he's having an engaging conversation. And then, you know, that was a huge influence on the way I do this show. So I went from being a fan to him being almost like, you know, a surrogate mentor because in terms of how you kind of entertain the audience and how you try to engage with your interviewer. So basically, he was a huge influence on me, Listening today, he had Billy Joel on, who's a very close friend. They know each other very well. So there's already this intimacy already established, which just really makes it a really good, you're going to end up hearing stuff that you haven't heard before. So he's talking to Billy Joel, and Billy Joel he asked Billy Joel, have you ever written a song? Once again, if you don't know who Billy Joel is, I mean, you're crazy. The craziest part is he's like a musical genius. He was playing the piano at 4. It is amazing what he does. So they're talking about his, you know, his creativity and how he, you know, creates his stories and his songs and stuff like that. And he then Howard said, ask him if he ever been recording and then the lyrics are good, but maybe the song just isn't, you know, the melody isn't quite right. And he goes, you know, and then Billy Joel comes in. He says, oh, you know, it's interesting you say that. Because I once, when I was writing, there's a famous song, I think it's Moving Out, where I'm not going to sing it, guys. This is not that kind of fucking show, okay? But Moving Out, he had written it and he was singing it, and then he played it for the guys of the band, and then one of the guys of the band says, oh, you schmuck, you know, he said something, oh, you shithead. That music is from this other artist. And all of a sudden, Billy Joel was like, oh, it really is. He didn't realize that he had been influenced by this artist. And he referred to it as, I was obviously influenced by this musician's music. And then it crept into my work. I was influenced. And then he ended up changing the music because he was just like, well, I don't want to copy this guy. I don't want people to think that I'm trying to sound like somebody else. So I'm going to, instead of, you know, it's such a great song and stuff like that, but I'm going to change the music because I want to be on my own path without the taint of this being about, you know, somebody else. I've taken somebody else's stuff, whatever, you know. So it was really interesting, and they kept on talking about who your influences are, and he was talking about Traffic and Steve Winwood and Paul McCartney, and he was talking about these people and then how they've influenced his work, even Jimi Hendrix. And he's talking about how they influence his work. And when they talk, when you hear people talking about to musicians, especially when you hear Howard Stern talking to other musicians, he will always ask who your influences are. And he's not saying it as who are you copying? But it's like, who has had such a huge effect on you? And then you want to kind of like, you want to almost have, you're taught by them and you have this kind of trace of who they are. Billy Joel wasn't insulted that he said influenced. And he certainly didn't say I was inspired by. He said he was influenced. When you're influenced by something, you're acknowledging that you like this person's style, you like this person's whatever, and you want to kind of inhabit some of that, or you want to have some of that on, you know, on what you do. And it wasn't this whole thing of like, you know, it was my influences are so and so and such and such. And it was interesting to me because we talk about on Knife Talk, we talk about this. I don't think the guys really want to talk, get too deep on the difference between influence and, you know, I think that they get a little bit nervous that I'm going to argue with them, which is nothing wrong with arguing. I think especially when it comes to kind of having an interesting conversation. But I think about influence versus being inspired a lot because I still to this day am surprised at how many people in the making community, the knife making community, when they tag me, they talk about how they were inspired by something that I did. And then they knock me off, whether it be the knives, whether it be I've been by sculpture that I've done in the past, or whether it be even the reels that I've been doing lately. They say inspired. And part of me is just like, well, it's not really inspired. I influenced you. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think when you say you're influenced, I think you're giving credit to someone in a very, you know, frankly, in a very reverential way, in a very respectful way, too, because otherwise you're basically saying inspired. It seems as though you've come up with these ideas on your own, which clearly isn't the case. You have no idea how many people DM me these people who are just kind of, you know, taking stuff that I've done, you're taking designs that I've done. I've had big companies. I've had friends. I've had acquaintances. I have people I don't know. And it's like, it's fine. I do get angry, and I started to wonder why I get angry. And it's not really angry. I mean, it's just like irritated. It's like, you know, Larry David irritated situation. And I started to like, somebody said to me, well, you know, imitation is a sincerest form of flattery. That expression is only half the expression. The expression is imitation is a serious form of flattery, and then something along the lines of, that someone mediocre pays towards greatness. Look at the whole goddamn quote before you start to say, you know, you should be flattered. All right. What is it about? What gets me so irritated? And I started to dwell on it, not the influence versus inspiration, but what gets me so torqued off about it. And when I say torqued off, relax. It's not that I don't get that torqued off. It's not that. And when it comes to like podcasts that are kind of trying to, you know, replicate what I've, you know, what we've been doing and Knife Talking with this, I don't get that torqued off. But for the sake of this story, I'm going to tell you, I'm here by myself. I'm here by myself. I got to fucking keep you occupied so you don't like get bored like the other podcasts you're listening to. Sorry. I'm taking shots too. Tough love, ladies and gentlemen. This is tough love. So I started to think about what happened, and it brought me back to when I first moved into the town I was in. We moved from Brooklyn to a little bit north of kind of like the border of Westchester in New York. And part of that was for my wife's job. Part of that was, there's a lot of reasons, but we ended up, I got left my shop and I didn't have a shop and stuff like that. And then we ended up moving to a north, when Lila was on the way, we couldn't afford the town we were living in to buy. And we ended up getting pushed up to an area that was a little bit more affordable. So we're in this area. And the first thing I'm trying to do is, it was billed at the place I, the area that I lived in is billed as an artist city. It was very well, you know, a lot of artists move up here from Brooklyn. And a lot of that's because, you know, none of us have any money. So, you know, it is what it is. That's the thing about these artist communities. They always start off being fucking dilapidated and drug fueled and just pathetic. And then artists move in. And then after artists move in, then businesses come in to, you know, serve the artists. Next thing you know, you have a place that becomes gentrified. It's just, you know, that's just the way it is. That's gentrification in a nutshell. So, yeah, artists move in. And next thing you know, it's gentrification. I mean, whether you like it or not, I mean, that's usually what gentrification is. We move up to this town. I'm looking for this art. I find out that there's this artist organization in the area. So I avail myself. I reach out, and then they're not very helpful to me. They're actually, as I remember, this is, you know, talking almost 20 years ago. I'm remembering thinking, fuck these guys. That was it was like a guild, but then I was just like, there was like rules and there was this and there was that. And I was looking at the work that other people were doing. And then they were kind of really kind of nasty to me. Nasty enough that I don't know if it was really nasty. I could have been just like this. I could have been prickly. I could have been a prick, but I seem to remember saying, fuck these guys. I'll do it myself. Fuck these guys, I'll do it myself has been my motto from 25 on. Fuck these guys, I'll do it myself. That's it. I don't need you. So I immediately I think I said to Hillary, I'm like, fuck these guys, I'll do it myself. I don't need their help. I ended up becoming friends with the general manager of this really awesome theater in town. They had a art show on this weird hallway. They had this very weird hallway. It was super thin. It was a long, narrow hallway, and there all of a sudden it was really well lit, and everything was, it was a strange, and I thought, how wild would it be if we did an art show in there, and everything was hung off the wall, but it was all sculpture. It was like sculptural stuff, and I had this idea, and I pitched this idea to the general manager, and I said, listen, I could come up with a show, and I could have everything kind of scooted off the wall, so when you're looking down the hallway, it's not like the hallway is activated by all this different work on the wall. It's in and out. It's, you know, nothing past like 2 or 3 inches, but like you have this kind of like, all of a sudden it's not about the one piece, but it's about the sum of all of it. And he says, oh, that sounds like a great idea. You got it. He says, but do me a favor, have more than just you. Have like a lot of people involved, have a group show. And I asked him why. And he goes, well, if you have a group show, when there's an opening, the people in the show will invite a lot of people and then we'll get more people in because there's going to be, this is the fact about art. You know, a group show is great because if there's an opening, all of a sudden you can have more people come to, you know, show some support because you have more people involved in the show. I'm like, no problem. I happen to meet other people in this area who are artists, young artists, friends of mine from Brooklyn, friends of mine. I've created, you know, these friendships with people, and they were all artists. And I was just like, look, here's what I want to do. And then we're going to create a connection. It won't be just like scattershot work. There's going to be a thoughtful idea. And in my mind, I was curating the show based on this long hallway. I really wanted everything to be kind of like offset, and then it'd be this kind of accumulation of things coming off the wall. And I had to try to figure out, well, what can we do to make this unified? Because everyone, all these artists I know, they're all doing different shit. And how can I make it unified? And I had this idea. I was friends with this guy who owned the skateboard company in town and a skateboard park. And I asked him if he had old, I did it with my friend Tim, and he got involved with these skateboard people. And every artist who was in the show also got a blank skateboard. And what we did was, I said, you can do whatever you want to it. As long as you can have one piece in the show, it can be a painting, it can be whatever, as long as we can hang on the wall, whatever. But you have to also do this skateboard. You do whatever you want to it. You do whatever you want. And then I made these blocks. And then when the came to installing the show, I'd get all these paintings and stuff like that. But then I'd mount the skateboard, because the interesting thing about a skateboard deck is it's not flat. It's three-dimensional. There are these curves. And when you look at it from the side, there's all this movement. And all of a sudden, because it's not a flat painting, it's not like a flat board. It's all these kind of, the tail end, and then nowadays the nose and the tail are almost identical, and then it roll, and then it moves a little bit. It's concave. All of a sudden, this becomes sculpture to me. So everybody got a skateboard deck. It was the same skateboard deck, and then everyone put a piece in. And then when we hung everything, you had this connection. You had this connection with everybody's work and the skateboard deck, and it was a rousing success. And it was so successful that, and we called it Meg. I called it. I needed a name for it, and I named it Mega Deck. Mega Deck. And it was like Megatron and, you know, Mega. And I just wanted it to be, I wanted a word to people ask. So we had Megadeck. And it was such a successful show that the city and the Peekskill, don't want to say the word, the artist group that was involved, that kind of sneered at me a little bit, they never had a show this well received in town. There's a museum in the area. They never had a show that this locally well received. And the place was packed. It was awesome. And it was a lot of work. And I realized that I did it out of spite. I did it out of spite to this organization. I did it out of spite because I thought it was fuck you. I'll do it myself. Fuck you. I'll do it myself. And it was a lot of work, but it was a lot of fun. It was really well received. And the city actually used it in a grant proposal to the state. And that was really cool. So like all of a sudden they pitched themselves as an artist city, and the show that I curated and I came up with and I sung and did the whole thing, it became, you know, something that the city used, you know, in a grant fund. I was honored. It was great. So we did it 2 years in a row, and it was a lot of fun. I got to the point where it was like, I'm doing too much for other people. And it was a lot of holding hands, a lot of administration stuff, a lot of dealing with diva mentality, and all I could think of at the end is, who am I doing this for? Do I want to be a curator? Do I want to be someone who does this, or am I trying to? And I was just like, it's enough with it. It's enough with this. We did a good run. We did some. It was fine. It was well received. And as a result, one of the former president of the artist group approached me and said to me, "We're nominating a new president, and we'd like to nominate you because we feel like there should be some fresh eyes." Now we're talking We're talking over 10 years ago, maybe 12 or 15 years ago. And he said, "We'd like some new eyes. We appreciated what you did. You're very, you know, I'm not going to tell you all the things he said, but it was very complimentary." And remember how I said flattery is imitation is sincerest form of flattery? Flattery does work on me in a lot of cases. When you put me in a position where you think, all right, he should be the president of this organization, that's a kind of flattery that I'm just like, okay, now I'm listening. He calls me up. He says, we're nominating new presidents, and I want to nominate you. This is the former president. I want to nominate you as the new president. I said, well, let me go down there and see what this is all about. So I'm thinking to myself, I told my wife, I'm like, I'm going to be the president of this artist group that fucking told me to go screw before. How great is this? And I haven't paid a nickel of dues. And this is just like, man, this is more than I had expected. Like when I first moved into this town and I thought, fuck these guys, I'll do it myself. I never thought they would nominate me to be the president. I go in there, I'm walking in there like a fucking, I got my chest puffed up. They had all seen the show. It was going to be a formality. They wanted new blood. They wanted me to come in. I'm walking in there like such a piece of shit. And I just walk in there and I listen to what they're going to, I listen to a meeting. And this guy's upset and that guy's upset. And when are you going to do this? And what are we going to do that? And as I'm listening to the people in this organization just Schreigewalt. That's a Yiddish expression for bitch and moan. My dad used to say that all the time. He's like, ugh, the Schreigewalt. And these people are just feckless. They are feckless. I mean, they're talking about, fucking I'll do it myself does not apply to any of these people. Not one of these people has the fuck it, I'll do it myself mentality. And these are all artists. These are all doers. These are all people who are problem solvers, except for their own. They felt entitled and they wanted this and they wanted their hands held. And all of a sudden, there was this moment where I was like, I cannot be the president of these people. I cannot help these people. They don't want to help themselves. I cannot help them. So I went up to my friend before he nominated me and I said, it's not for me. After this meeting, it's not for me. Listening to what these people need, I cannot do it. I cannot do these things on my own. I can't do it. And I am very sorry. I really appreciate it. But I cannot help people that cannot help themselves. I cannot hold the hands of people who need to be told what to do. I can't sit here and have my energy sapped from people who are unwilling to figure things out. I mean, there were some things that they wanted that were just like outrageous. It was outrageous that they felt they were due. And I was like, I appreciate it, my man. I appreciate it. You're my guy. And every time I see him, we're always very friendly. And he understood. He completely understood. He said, I know where you, I knew it. I didn't think that you'd fuck. I didn't think you'd. I think that he was more surprised that I would relinquish my nomination before I even had a chance to be nominated. And I was like, I walked home. I said to my wife, man, I dodged a bullet. These people, they cannot help themselves. This is stuff they should be able to do themselves. And I don't want to be responsible for their success. That's crazy. That's crazy that these people are in this particular business and they're expecting the president of this organization to show them and give them success. Crazy. Totally crazy. So afterwards, another thing happened. The museum that was involved in the city had realized that there were artists that they had no idea that were here. And they approached me about creating this postgraduate art critique group for, specific artists that they, handpicked artists to do these, at night, once a week, we would do a critique. And a critique is somebody brings their work, and it would be one person per week. They'd come up, there'd be something to eat, there'd be a couple laughs, a couple jokes, and it was a group of people from all over this area. A lot of really, really, I mean, like, it was great, different than this other organization, because I felt intimidated by this group. Some of the artists in this group were, like, very well-seasoned. Very successful galleries, the gallerists, they had shows all over the world. These were like respectable artists. You look at their work, you're like, shit, that's fucking good. So I was like psyched because it was like, I helped bring part of this organization to, we called it the Artist Club. And it was great. And it was like, we would, every week it would be a different, it was like usually on Thursday nights, I think it was something like one night. And it was like, they'd go long, they'd go late. And then they would show up and everyone would be, it was in this museum, this beautiful museum. And then the couple.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
We'll be right back.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Kind of like who owned it, or, you know, they would kind of give us some refreshments and we'd have this nice conversation. It was a networking thing too. And somebody would bring in their work and then we would discuss the work. And what was amazing was the critiques that I was used to is everybody would do a round robin with their own work and you'd give 5 minutes. Well, the whole night was devoted to this one piece. And the rules were, in the beginning, the artist can't say anything. And the group would CSI the piece that they submitted. So all of a sudden you're getting, where are we now? Okay. They would submit a piece, usually paintings, and we would talk about the work and talk about the color, but not the work. We talk about this particular work. We would kind of separate ourselves out from if we knew their body of work, and we would just kind of like micro investigate this piece. And when you say micro investigate, you're looking at the paint, you're trying to, you're slowly trying to create from a basic to an overall theme. What kind of paint is it? What kind of brushes do you think they're using? What kind of strokes are these all about? And what is the, you know, talk about the technical aspects of it, or is this area here that's very muddy? Was this a problem where you feel as though it wasn't spontaneous, it wasn't meant to be, that there's a struggle? I started to really learn about painting. And the crazy part is I wish I knew more about painting. The only painting I knew about was my father was an amazing painter, but he was unable or unwilling to kind of teach me about painting in and of itself. I did not have a vocabulary or a firm understanding. Imagine if your dad was a professional baseball player. Imagine if your dad was a professional, let's say, basketball player, and he just couldn't show you how to dribble the ball. He just couldn't show you how to shoot a layup do a little finger roll. He could not show you handles. He couldn't show you how to do this stuff, or he wouldn't. That's what it was like for me. My father was a professional. He was as gifted a painter as I'd ever met, still to this day. He was unable or unwilling to teach me how to paint. And that to me is one of my biggest regrets right now, because but this artist group, I started to kind of gain a better understanding. And when I went to college as an art major, I didn't take any fucking painting classes. And part of it was because I cannot compete with my father as a painter. So why even bother taking a painting class? It was so stupid. I should have been taking painting classes. I'm still planning on it. I should have taken him when I had the chance, and I didn't, because I thought, why should I compete with my father? My father also really didn't want me competing with him either. Another weird situation. And I went into sculpture. So I'm starting to kind of learn about painting and understanding painting. And there are things in painting, and talking to my friends who are awesome painters. You can start to identify mark. And then when I'm painting sculpture, I'm starting to kind of like, as a non, you know, I didn't learn how to paint, so I'm learning on my own. I'm starting to kind of use my own experiences to understand what other people are going through. I don't like this color. Let me just kind of work a little bit with a different shade. And all of a sudden it becomes muddy. And then all of a sudden you have this moment where you can identify this moment of frustration. So there's really interesting, you know, you're talking about the technical details and you're saying that this corner here has, you know, has been worked harder than this other corner here. And I'm starting to get this sense of like incongruity, and I'm also getting this weird tension and stuff like that. And then you start to talk about, what does it mean? And we were having these really interesting, and then the artist is sitting there just like probably pulling their goddamn hair out, just listening to these morons talk about their work in this, like, you know, like crime scene investigators. And then all of a sudden, you know, you talk about you talk about, what is he trying to say? And if this is what he's trying to say, is he successful? And then after you've exhausted every avenue, why did he decide to paint over the side? And why did he decide to put it in a frame? And what does the frame mean? And there's no rock is left unturned. That's a real critique. And then you end up saying at the end, was this the intention of the artist, and was that intention successfully shown to the viewer? Then you ask the artist. The artist says, "Yeah, this was my intention, and my intention was this." And then you say, and then at the end you say, "Was it successful or not successful?" And then it becomes a really interesting conversation. And it's not like the stupid part is some of you people. I'm back to fucking tough love. Some of you people think that art talk is like, you know, intellectual bullshit and artsy fartsy talk. But it isn't. It's actually, if you just, and I don't fucking do all the, you know, what my friend Mark, Mark the photographer sends me this, the neo-Buddhist, you know, intellectual talk. I don't talk like that. I talk like this. So when I explain things, especially when it comes to art, if you talk like a normal person, it becomes more approachable, and then that's more interesting. I don't have to try to confuse you, and I don't have to try to make you feel as though I'm smarter than you are, because I'm not. I'm an idiot. I told Sam from Trojan Horse Forge, if I don't call him in the next 2 weeks, I'm garbage. That, I know who I am, ladies and gentlemen. So it's really interesting. So we would have these critiques, and then all of a sudden, it was very painting heavy, and then I was nominated to come in. And they brought in one of my sculptures. It was a small gas-welded steel bird perched on the steel plate, and then the plate was mounted to this wooden block that I used graffiti pens. I made kind of graffiti. In my opinion of what graffiti is, and so I'll explain the whole thing. A lot of it was due to my daughter. I had to be around when she was very, very young, and I had to be able to do stuff that I could be around her. So I was doing a lot of gas welding, you know, in the off time, and then I was doing this small painting because I could use these paint pens and I could be around my daughter and it wasn't noxious, and I was able to be with her, and also when she was an infant, I could actually work too. So my opinion on, so it was a steel bird. I'll post it. If you go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram, this will be my post for, this will be the post for, the picture on the cover will be the post of the painting, the sculpture I did. So it's this bird and it's sitting there, and then I use steel, I used oxyacetylene to weld 1/8-inch rod, which is the best of all time. And then afterwards, I used a brazing rods and the torch, and then I brazed on this coating of bronze, brass in different places and stuff like that. And then I mounted this block. Now, what I wanted to do is to create this concept of this, you know, this bird, the steel bird covered in bronze, and then it was sitting on this block that was graffitied. And when I say graffiti, I'm going to explain to you what is interesting about graffiti. When I think of terrible graffiti, I think of the set of The Fresh Prince and DJ's Jazzy Jeff, Parents Just Understand, where some dude had three colors and then he painted those three colors very quickly and everything like that. When you start to look at a graffitied building, what's interesting is it becomes this interesting conversation of time. You have one guy that tags, and then another guy completely different tags something different on top, and then something different on top, and then something different on top. And what happens is then there's another guy who tags something completely different, a different pen, and you know, they're one on top of the other on top of the other. And what that does is that automatically, and your eye, when you see graffiti, you automatically can tell time, the passing of time. So it becomes this, if you do it right, you can create the concept of time passing. And so what I would do is I would use color and stuff like that, and then I would use different pens, and then I would write something, and then I would stop, and then I'd get a different pen, and then I'd create these different characters, and then I'd post on, I'd tag on top of the other one, I'd tag on top of the other one. And then then all of a sudden you're creating this really cool pattern that's different, but the interesting thing is it isn't about the graffiti anymore. It's the passing of time. It's the passing of time. So that was one thing. And then so I bring the sculpture in, gas welded steel bird, painted it, and they start to CSI the sculpture. They had no idea what the fuck I did. There was no technical abilities. I was like stupefied. Is it bronze? I think it's a bronze casting. And then the bronze, and they're just, it's like, I'm like, they're saying the stupidest things I've ever heard. This is nothing. They're not even close. And some of these people know me, and they're not even coming close to how I did this. They're not even, they are assured that this is a bronze casting and that, they're going down the wrong road. They're going down the wrong road. And I'm sitting there being like, I've been to so many critiques and they're just so accurate. And the artist says, wow, you really figured out what I was doing and you understood what I was doing. They could tell what the paintbrush was and they could tell what the paint was. Now I knew it was oil. This was clearly oil because they're looking at my fucking sculpture. And it's like, how fucking stupid could you guys be? And then I was hoping for some sort of clarity. And I was just like, I can't trust the fucking thing these people say. They're so stupid. And they go on and on and on. And I'm just like, they're talking about bronze casting. And I'm just, there's no fucking bronze casting. They don't know about weld. They don't know about metalwork. And I'm just like, the whole thing's fucking ridiculous. And all of a sudden, they come to me and they say, well, what do you think about what I said? And I'm just like, I'll be frankly, I'm slightly mortified. You guys don't know anything about sculpture at all. And then there was a silence. I'm like, I mean, I sat here. I didn't say a thing. I could have stopped you. Maybe I should have. But I was just like, I just wasted an hour, my hour and a half of my life listening to you morons. And it was just like, I can't count on you anymore. You have not impressed me whatsoever with your idea about what sculpture is and what any of it is. And I was just like, ugh. And I was just like, ugh, people suck. And it was like, clearly the best part was the guy who ran the whole thing was very proud of himself. And then I was just like, man, you guys don't know anything about sculpture. You don't know how to build anything. You're good when it comes to painting. You know what you're talking about. But when it comes to making anything sculptural, you're terrible. You're terrible. I sat here for an hour and a half. You didn't hit one thing. I didn't use bronze. I used brass. That's number one. And then that's the closest thing you got. Everything else was like, forget. I mean, you morons. So that was embarrassing for all of us. And I let them all know. And it was like, ugh, you people. I said, you people, why? When am I going to get? And I started breaking their balls. One guy was like assured of all this stuff. And he was wearing, you know, pants where they come up high. I think, you know, they're like, you know, when the leg comes up high, like just below your knee, and he's so sure of himself. And I said, and frankly, I said, I cannot take any type of criticism from a man wearing capri pants. I am sorry. Everyone started laughing and I was just such a wreck. And I was an asshole. I was a total asshole. But at the same time, it was just like, why did I, you people are, I mean, you don't know anything about sculpture. You know about painting. You know nothing about sculpture. So that was one of the last artist group. We still did it a few times. And then I went in there just with like a fucking hacksaw. I went in there like a fucking maniac. I just went in there. If I didn't say something poignant, I'd say something funny. I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to have a good time here. I'm not going to sit here for 3 hours going down the wrong way. This is like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. So I can't, you know. All of a sudden there was opportunity for a grant. New York State was doing a grant and it was going to be for the river area of our town. And it was this, anybody living in New York State could apply for this grant. So apparently they had, and it was run through this museum and it was specifically for our town. So over 150 artists applied for it and they whittled it down to 10. No. Yeah, they whittled it down to 10 finalists. And I got the letter that I was one of the finalists. It was like, I can't believe it. It was for 70 Gs. 70 Gs. So I had this idea and I wrote this, you know, this proposal and stuff like that. And I got whittled down to they were going to have 7 artists. They were going to have 7 artists and they were whittling it down from 10 to 7. I think so. I think it was 10 to 7. Or it was 7. No, my mistake. It was 8 artists, and they were going to whittle it down to 5 artists. So 3 were going to get the pike. 3 were going to get out. We don't want you. You're 70 grand. Get out. So in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, all right, I got to win this thing. And I'm looking at the people who are also in the other people. I'm the only person who lives in the city that this grant is going to. I'm the only one. So I get the paperwork and I'm supposed to meet with the judges. I'm supposed to do a PowerPoint presentation, which I had never done before. I'm supposed to have models. I'm supposed to have scales. I'm also supposed to have signed off the sculpture that I was going to submit, signed off to I was supposed to have a licensed engineer sign off on my drawings. There was a lot of shit that I had to do in order for this to happen. And I was just like, I am going to do everything in my power to get this goddamn grant. Because in my mind, I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm 70 G's. If you're an artist and you have an opportunity to get 70 grand to make a sculpture, it might as well have been $1 million. So I did drawings. I had my friend do computer renderings. I had ideas. I had this great idea. And then I backfilled it with, the money is going to stay in this town. I figured out I'm going to buy the steel from this welding company in town. All the wood I'm going to buy from this lumber company in town. I'm going to buy all my hardware from a hardware company in town. All the money I spend will be solely in this town. I'm going to use local companies to help build this sculpture. All that 70 grand, whatever goes to, and then I'm going to pay my rent, and then it's going to stay in the town. So that all of a sudden I'm thinking, the judge has got to like that. Then I had already established a internship program with the local high school, and I said, I'm going to have a internship where I have our young high school art majors come and help me. And I'll tell you a funny story. So I was like, help me. When you're an intern for an artist, you're maybe it's not that exciting, but you get to work with an artist and you get people to do tasks that are, at their level. You don't make them do crazy things. You make them do things that are, approachable, help you with color samples, help you with, maybe there's going to be some sweeping to do. Maybe we'll move something. Maybe you'll help me, pick something up. Or it's within the confines of, being able to have an intern work with the artist as getting experience of working with an artist. You're not going to do I'm not hiring, getting slave labor. I mean, it's just ridiculous. My wife helped me with the PowerPoint. She showed me how to do PowerPoint. We ran through it. I ran through my PowerPoint presentation 4 or 5 times. I knew what I was going to do. And then I knew the judges. I knew a couple of the people. I knew a couple of the judges. I was friendly with them, but not too friendly with them. I felt as though my whole proposal was very strong. Very strong. I might have even told this story before, but that was a while ago. You guys are new listeners. I go in scared shitless, and I'm thinking to myself, fuck it, I'll do it myself. I'm going to make this happen. I've never done this before. I'm going to make it happen. Whatever it takes. I was prepared. I was ready to go. I brought a model in. I brought pictures in. I brought PowerPoint. I explained everything. I talked about how this is going to be, all the money's going to stay in the city. And then they asked me some stupid questions. One person was like, I don't understand. You say you're going to have internships. I don't think it's safe to have interns welding. And I said, madam, I didn't say this jerky at all. I said this as nice as possible. I wanted to light this person up. I explained it the way I just explained to you. You give people jobs that they can handle. You don't start to say, all right, start making the sculpture. And then I go grab a iced latte and put my feet up. I will help, you're going to help me with color samples. You're going to help me with, maybe some sweeping up. Like I said, maybe there's some where there won't be anything. I explained that I have had interns before and I never put any intern in a position of being, unsafe. We're not going to, and that was the weird part was, is she just couldn't understand it. And I was just like, I had to keep explaining what it is an artist does. And it's not all just like, grinding and stuff. I don't feel safe. I don't feel safe either. Trust me. I felt that I did a good job. And at the end, the people who were involved with the whole organization said to me that my presentation was the strongest of the 7. the strongest of the eight, or the eight people. Mine was the strongest. I was charming as hell, of course. Come on, stop playing. Stop playing. We knew that I was going to say that. I knew it was going to happen. I was charming as fuck. I was funny. I was comfortable. I had answers for their questions. Their questions were easy. I mean, they were going to ask me questions. Their questions were easy. Easy. I had the sign off from the engineer, a whole nine yards. All right, I did everything I can do. I can't do anymore. And they said that mine was the strongest. I made some jokes. I said that, you know, this and that and the other thing. It was like I was confident, but I wasn't overconfident. I was like, I was in there. And I get home and I said to my wife, I'm like, they told me it was the best goddamn one they had. I'm like, there's eight people. And they're only going to pick five. It's better than 50%. It's better than, I just need two guys worse than me. I need three guys worse than me. No problem. They said I did the best. They said I did the best of everybody. Weeks pass. Get a letter in the mail. Oh, you know what? I didn't get a letter in the mail. I did get a letter in the mail. I got a letter in the mail. Thank you so much. It was a form letter. Thank you so much for submitting. Unfortunately, you didn't, you know, make the cut. And I was crestfallen. I did everything I could. And I could not. Nobody else was from our city. No one else was going to be doing what I was. No one else was going to be kind of keeping the money in the town. I would think that it was specifically for this town. I just felt like, I don't understand how could this have happened? Well, it turns out that the people that had connections with the judges, the people who were involved with the whole thing, overseeing the whole thing with the judges, also were the people who were running the art critique. And it turns out that most of the people who got the five, allegedly, were artists that worked for the gallery of the people who were running the whole thing. So it smelled like the fix was in, allegedly. I know, the fix was in. The fix was in. It felt like the fix was in. All I could think of was, who are these people? And then they're this connected to this gallery, connect same gallery. The five were connected to the same gallery, or four of them were connected to the same gallery. It's been a while. And I'm just livid. And all I could think of is, God damn it, I wasted so much time and so much energy, and I did everything right. And I just like, and usually it'd be like, I can take it. This one I couldn't fucking take. I could not take. I got fucking stolen from. I felt in my mind I got stolen from. Go to one of the artist critique groups, and one of the artists who submitted got in the show. And the guy congratulated him, and then congratulated him and stared at me while he congratulated. I want to congratulate so-and-so. You made the, let's all give a congratulations to, and he just stared at me. He stared at me while he was congratulating the guy who got in, who also was in one of his artists. The artist who was accepted was also one of his guys. So, in terms of, you think about the distance between it all, if a gallery receives a certain percentage of what the artist makes, that also probably goes with the grants. So if somebody gets a grant, if you're an artist and you're making sculpture and you're under the protection or you're under the representation of a gallery, a gallery's getting a taste. So there was money. It was a money situation, and there's no question about it. I mean, there's no question about it that they got a taste. They got a taste of five different. They got a piece of the action of five of the artists, $70,000 a pop. So then I might have said a few things, and I think I basically was just like some bullshit. One of the people involved pulled me aside and said, let's talk. And I just let her have it. And I said, this is some bullshit. I said, you know, this is bullshit. You told me that this was the strongest of the things. And I was just like, fuck it. I said, fuck it. I got no control. It's nothing to do with me anymore. I'm over it. I said, but I'm going to tell you this. These goddamn sculptures better be the best goddamn sculptures I've ever seen. These better be some fucking bawling sculptures. These better be some bitch-ass awesome sculptures. These better be some fucking awesome sculptures. And I just let it loose. And that was it. And that pretty much was the end of me in this organization. And then the fix was in. And fuck it, I'll do it myself was like, it also soured me on galleries. It soured me on galleries. And I, at the time, I had already started making knives. And so maybe this is closer to 10 years ago. I had a shop with my friend John Ledford, and we were working on projects and stuff like that. And then I started, I was doing some teaching here and there. And it was this moment of like, I cannot count on other people. I cannot count on people having my best interests at heart. Fuck you. I have to do it myself. Fuck you. I'll do it myself. And that has been my fucking... And the last opportunity I had for a show, I pitched a solo show to this really reputable gallery in the area. The gallerist came down. I gave her I showed her all my work, and we did a whole big thing looking at my work. Da, 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 da. And at the time I was making knives as well, but I thought this would be a great opportunity for me to do all new work. And I said to the woman, I will do all new work. Everything I do, if you give me a solo show, it will be all new work. Tons of new work. Tons of new work. And they said, we would love to give you the show, and here's our conditions. We're going to get 40% of the revenue, 40% of the revenue of the sales. 30 or 40%, I couldn't remember, or 50%, whatever. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was between 30 and 50%. And then the gallery will only be open on weekends for, 3-4 weeks, and you have to be here you have to be here during opening and closing hours to sell the work. So I had to make the work. I had to promote the work. I had to be here to sell the work, and I had to give them a piece of the action, a big piece. And I was just like, fuck it. I'm not doing this anymore. I don't want this pimp relationship is not for me. Totally not for me. And I said, thank you very much. I've decided to change my mind, which must have been weird, fucking weird. Must have been really weird for her, the gallerist, after I pitched this show to me. Like me, turn. I basically said, your terms are not. I cannot do your terms. And then I was like, fuck it. I'll make knives. I'll do it myself. I said, fuck it. I'll do it myself. And then I really kind of kicked in full blast into the knife making. And then also getting involved with the podcast and getting involved with Knife Talk. And before Knife Talk, I was doing the Downward Spiral with my bro, Nico Tavernisi, and we're going to get him back on sooner rather than later. And it was like, fuck it. I'll do it myself. And I'll do it myself. I'll figure it out myself. I don't need help. I don't need help. And I don't want help. And growing into it and growing into Fader Knives and growing into being the host of Knife Talk, I am amazed at some of the questions that we get, and a lot of them are great questions for the show, for Knife Talk. If you don't know, Knife Talk is the number one knife-related podcast on the germ-infested planet, whether you like it or not. And I just remember kind of this feeling of like becoming a... I went from being a sculptor to being a knife maker, and now I'm in the maker community, and there's all these like... I'm noticing the differences between sculpture and knife making and making and forging and blacksmithing. And there's this real difference. But I always kind of saw it as something as problem solving. Like, to me, all of it was the same. Cooking was the same. Making sculpture was the same. Making knives are the same. Forging's the same. It's all taking a technique and then a little bit of discipline and being organized with your mind and kind of executing your creativity. And to me, it was just like, that's it. I mean, that's what sculpture is, you know? And I start to see more and more knife makers who identify as artists, I might add. And I've been saying forever, knife making is not art. I don't give a fuck. You know what? I'll get these guys on. I get Nick Rossi on, and he'll argue with me about it, but in a polite way. God bless him. I'm gonna if I have a guest on here, and they want to tell me that knife making is art, I'm gonna say you're right. because I'm fucking spineless when it comes to like, you know, I don't want to make things weird, but at the same time, in my heart of hearts, it's what knife making is. Could be art. In certain circumstances, it might be art. But what art is you're taking this idea and your creativity, and then you're kind of creating your own spin on something, or your own take on something that's specifically yours. It's your concept. It's your journey. It's something based off of something that you've done, and your work should be an evolution of that idea or an idea. You should every piece that you do, every knife you make or something like that, or every sculpture you make or every painting you make should be a distant cousin of the last one. There should be a fingerprint all the way. You should be looking down the hallway, and then every single step is leading towards what you're doing now. That sounded weird, but you know what I'm saying? Like, it should be a family, and you should be able to recognize traits that give you your style. And as I'm getting involved with this knife making world, I'll never forget. I went to a blade show and I got introduced to this guy, and the guy says to me, "Oh, what do you do?" And I said to him, "What do you do?" And he goes, "Oh, I'm a knife artist." And there was a very famous artist who made stuff out of tools. His name is Armand. And he would make these giant sculptures out of axes. He got fucking 1,000 axes or 1,000 wrenches or 1,000 knives. Or he would weld them all together and create this kind of thing. And I'm thinking, that's what he's doing. I mean, that's a knife. Armand is the fucking knife artist, because he's taking all these knives and welding them into something. And I started to just like... I needed a bit when I started with knife talk. And I basically made the point, because all these guys are, I'm an artist, this is my art. And I'm just like, it's not art. I mean, you can't go to fucking, you go to a gallery and try to, you know, pitch a show and be part of the art community with your knife. It's not going to happen. Or very rarely it's going to happen. There are art type knives, and there are artistic knives, and there are knives that are very, you know, but it's a self-expression, but I just don't think it's not sculpture. It's not fucking sculpture. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. What the fuck do I know? Maybe I'm wrong. But what I do know is there's a difference between being influenced and being inspired. When you tag me in something and you say, I'm inspired by, and then you, by Fader, because you're not really using the right terminology. You're being influenced. If you see the way I do something and you decide that's what I want to do, I want to do a K-tip, and I want to do the color, lots of colors, and I want to do all this stuff. Don't tag me in it just to tag me in. Tag me in it and say, this has been influenced by the work of Jeff Fader, and I won't be offended, and you shouldn't either. But it's far more correct than just ripping me off, because that's generally what it is. And I've been ripped off, like I said, I've been ripped off by knife companies. I've been ripped off from friends. I've been ripped off from people I barely know. I'm on a vent right now, and I'm done. I'm done venting. I'm with you 100%. You want to do my thing, go ahead. You want to start a podcast, and you want to try to, like, I mean, I do your thing, live your life. I'm with you. You want to be influenced, just do me a favor. If you want to be on my good side, stop using inspired. I'm inspired by Jalen Brunson. Jalen Brunson, guard on the New York Knicks, worked his goddamn ass off, not without being 7 feet tall, without being faster than anybody, without being more athletic than anybody. He willed himself through hard work and discipline to become one of the best. He's an inspiration. And when I talk about influence, Brancusi is an influence of my work. I appreciate the contrast of the shapes that he uses in his sculptures. I appreciate the different shapes, the forms. His kind of feather, his sculpture Bird in Space is one of my favorite sculptures of all time. I am influenced by Brancusi. I am influenced by Basquiat. I'm influenced by Keith Haring. I'm influenced by a lot of different artists, and I don't say I'm inspired by them, because it's not as if I came up with it on my own. Their influence on me informed the decisions that I make, and I show my respect by saying it. My fucking logo My the Anvil logo that I have on my merch. The whole idea was there. It's a crown, an anvil, and on the bottom is my touch mark. The whole thing is a play on the fact that the crown is meant to be a Basquiat crown, because I'm showing respect to Basquiat, and I'm also showing respect for the fact that I was an artist for a long time. The anvil is a Hey Button based off of one of my favorite anvils they have here that I got from my brother Jesse. Jesse Savage sold me his. And then the bottom is my touch mark. So there's this three-part logo. The logo is the crown. It's the Basquiat crown, the anvil, and the touch mark. And it's this kind of connection between my past, my future, and my history. And to me, that means something. So, and when I talk about all my work, I can talk about it in a very natural way. I'm fucking going crazy here. I'm going to go. What am I doing? What am I doing? I'm blabbing. Where are we? 117. All right. You know what I'm saying. Listen, I want you to be inspired by things. I want you to be influenced by things. I want you to not rip me off. Okay. That's what I'm asking. I want you to not rip me off. And if you think, why am I whispering? If you think that I'm talking to you, the chances are I'm talking to you. So just find your own way. Don't jerk each other off either. That's what, you know, reels guys, you should be focusing on business, and instead you're circle jerking each other, and it doesn't make any sense to me. I'm doing these reels to try to get new eyes on the product. I've said enough. I'm rambling, ladies and gentlemen. I was going to talk about podcasts, and I don't think I am. I was going to talk about new podcasts I've been listening to. Send shout out to my boys, Jared Sandoval and Dennis Terrell. I'm starting to really look forward to what they're up to. They're doing a podcast called The Triple T for Knife Makers. It's definitely not knife talk, which I appreciate. And they're it's too early to like give them critique. I'm going to try to have them on soon rather than later, because I like those guys, and they're doing a different perspective. It's actually as far as a different, and it's too early to make judgments. They're working out. I talked to Dennis, you know, they're working things out. I appreciate what they're doing. I'm trying to get them on this thing. And then we got that squared away. So I would highly suggest finding your own. One of the things that I appreciate about what they're doing is they're trying to find their own way. And if you're a podcaster, if you're a maker, if you're Instagram, you know, content person, try to find your own way. That is far more. And if you're a business, find your own way. Be sincere in the decisions that you make. Be sincere. Try to be deliberate. Right now, I'm doing these posts on Instagram, and some people don't know what the fuck I'm doing, and I know what I'm doing. And the idea was I want to have something recognizable. I want something, number one, that's lots of juice and no squeeze. Number two is something that's over and over again. Magic carpet ride. You're getting magic. Ladies and gentlemen, you're getting magic carpet ride for a long time, so just get fucking used to it. And I want it to look like it is, and I'm trying to dodge the algorithm, and it's working. My numbers are looking a lot better, and a lot of it's because I'm being consistent. I'm doing this, and do your own, but find your thing and do your own thing and be consistent. Don't just do what I do. It's annoying. Find your own way. I want you to find your own way. You should say to yourself, fuck it, I'll do it myself, ladies and gentlemen. Fuck it, I'll do it myself. I said too much. Giving you the tough love. And I haven't been very nice. So I want to apologize if I've hurt your feelings, or I've gone overboard, or I have said something to offend you. I apologize. Okay, last but certainly not least, I have some guests on I'm really looking forward to. And one of them is my friend Pat Quinn. Now, I am going to say it once, and I'm going to say it 1,000 more times. I need your questions. I need your questions, your blacksmithing questions, because we're going to do a question and answer where I'm going to answer or I'm going to read questions from you to Pat about blacksmithing. You want to talk about tooling. You want to talk about how should I start. You want to talk about forging. You want to talk about forge welding. You want to talk about what you should be looking for in a forge, or what's the difference in a different anvil, and what kind of anvils you like. Questions that he can answer that's relative to don't play. Some of you guys are sending me these just dorky questions. They're just like, have you ever done? Don't. Just keep, we're not playing, ladies and gentlemen. Blacksmithing questions. Pat Quinn, we're trying something out. It might be something ongoing. You never know. But it's going to be a great resource. I also have slots available at the Center for Metal Arts for my friction folder class. Go to centerformetalarts.org and sign up for the weekend class. It is worth it, worth it, worth it. If you are a seasoned veteran or a beginner, no experience necessary. If you want to leave with a working folding knife, a friction folder, I got you. I got you. Well, I got you. Totally got you. So listen to me. Go to Full Blast Podcast on Instagram and submit your questions. And we got a great show coming up in the next week, and the week after that, and the week after that, and the week after that. If you want to support the podcast, go to faderknives.com and buy some fucking merch, okay? Get yourself a t-shirt. Get yourself a hoodie. Get yourself a hat. Get yourself a watch cap. You want to support this show? Get your fat ass off the couch, because I got 4X, 3X, 5X, double X. I got XL, small, medium, large. Get your bony ass off the couch and get yourself some merch. Get your fat ass off the couch and get some merch. You want to support the show? You're listening to the show. I entertain you on your way to work or in the shop or whatever. Go buy some merch. Get your fat, bony ass off the couch. Get your credit card out and go to faderknives.com. Buy some fucking merch. I've said enough, ladies and gentlemen. I've said enough. I've said enough. I've said too much. All right, guys, because if you can't do it in an hour and a half, baby, it ain't worth doing. You know what I'm saying? Well, that's fine. All right, guys, we will see you next week. Thank you so much.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.